when there are these areas of mutual interest and involvement, we are encouraged, not simply allowed, to confer. And in conferring, we co-chair here under three. Those of you who are following the rules, it's rule 169, four, three, and then four. Now, it is required because we are not, it wasn't referred jointly, that it is then required within terms of the rules to adopt, you know, the resolution separately in each committee. So I hope that is quite understood. And then having said that, this is a conferral meeting with two chairs. The chair of the Standing Committee on Finance, the Honourable Eunice Karim, has been steadily getting more ill and is now diagnosed with bronchitis and a couple of complications, and clearly has asked the Honourable to sit to co-chair and to take his place. Yes, you do. So we would like to welcome the ministers here, Dr. Rob Davies of Trade and Industry, Minister Nene, the Minister of Finance, but also the Deputy Minister of Finance, the Honourable Gungubele, who is also here. We also have with the Minister of Trade and Industry, Mr. Mene, oh, right, who is the Chief Director, International Trade and Economic Development and Division. And then we have the Chief Director from the Ministry of Finance, is it Nolundi Dikweni. But actually, you're not from finance, I apologize, or you could be linked to finance, it's international relations. Is it in finance itself? Right, directly within the ministry. Thank you very much. And then just to make it quite clear, that it is my co-chair, the Honourable Tobias. All right? Now, on this committee, I don't use first names. It's a preference for the chair. I prefer to use family names, as simple as that. So, but we all have our differences, our preferences, not so. Now, let's start off by getting straight through to the agenda. We need to have the adoption of the agenda. Honourable Tierko seconded. It would be a great idea if we got the seconded from someone in the front. Was that? Yes, Honourable MacPherson. Thank you very much. The apologies, Mr. Hermans.
Chairperson, I did not receive any apologies at this time, except the apology that was submitted from the
okay. Actually, Secretary can't sit here because there's not enough space. We've got three apologies. One is the chairperson is off sick. Two is Mr. Natin Sheko, who's got family matters. And then Honorable Peggy Nkonyeni will be a bit late. She's around Precinct of Parliament. Thank you.
As you say, your secretary, due to room, Mr. Wickham and your colleagues, you know, thank you for pulling the meeting together for all of us with our secretary. On that particular note, colleagues, if we are all agreed, can we begin with a briefing? And the briefing will start off with Trade and Industry, Dr. Rob Davies. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. What's going to happen is I'm going to do the introduction, then Minister Nene will do the finance issues, then I'll do the trade and industry issues and the conclusions. This presentation, as is indicated, a joint presentation. The background is that we have been engaged in quite a number of discussions with our colleagues in SACA, and we are reconvening in two groups, which is called the Ministerial Task Forces on the finance issues and on the trade and industry issues. And there have been quite a lot of debates about implementing the 2002 agreement, and these debates I think we will identify as we move forward. What we are looking to, because the decision that we took last time when we were in SACA was that we need to consult and come back to the discussions again, having consulted back home. So this is part of our consultations, and we welcome the inputs that have come from the two portfolio committees. So the presentation is going to deal with these items, the background, then it's going to go through a number of the aspects of the current architecture, the issues in SACA, our approach, some of the issues that we are going to have to confront and take positions as a country. To start with the background, SACU, the Southern African Customs Union, was established in 1910, formally, but actually existed even in the 1880s, 1890s, and it embraces at the moment the independent countries of Botswana, Eswatini, Lesotho, Namibia, and ourselves. So these are the members of this customs union. As it was established in 1910, it is in fact the world's oldest customs union. It predates the EU by about half a century. It was it celebrated its centenary in 2010, obviously. And at the time, there was a lot of discussion about what is this customs union all about, what is its relevance. And a number of us made the point that, in fact, although it is the world's longest customs union, for most of its existence, it was a colonial and apartheid arrangement. In fact, it was an arrangement that was a relationship of convenience held together by a redistributive revenue sharing formula. And the essence of it is that as a customs union, the customs tariffs that are enforced in South Africa applied throughout the customs union, throughout the largest customs union. So the tariffs that are on imports from the rest of the world are the same in Botswana as they are in South Africa, as they are in Eswatini, etc. And also that there is duty-free trade within the customs union, so that there are no tariffs on trade between South Africa and the other countries and vice versa. That's the essence of the customs union. So it's free trade within the area, but also then a common external tariff, as it's called, a CET, the same tariff. There are, here and there, there are exceptions, but by and large, that is the essence of it. And as I said, for most of its existence, it was simply run by South Africa. It was not run with any kind of structures or consultative arrangements involving all members. It was run administratively even from South Africa. When South Africa was moving towards democracy in 1994, the question of the renegotiation came up, and this renegotiation resulted in an agreement which was contained in a treaty in 2002, and the new agreement entered into force in 2004. And essentially what it does is it sets up proper consultative democratic institutions governing the relations within the customs union and the countries of the customs union. And more specifically, it sets up a council of ministers, which is attended by ministers of finance and ministers of trade and industry. The next meeting will be at the council on the 21st, preceded by ministerial task forces on the different subjects. In 2011, the treaty was amended to provide for another layer, and that was the summit. So each year the heads of state meet, and there was a meeting a few months ago in Botswana. Essentially, the summit is to provide strategic guidance to SACU. What it does is it retains this common external tariff, on goods that are imported into the SACU market. The key elements of the 2002 agreement, which I should say builds on previous agreements, because what happened was that initially the distribution of revenue was not in any way skewed in favor of anybody, but from really about the time that Botswana, Lesotho and Swaziland started to become independent, there started to be a weighting of the formula for the revenue, a weighting that was intended to compensate these countries for being drawn behind South Africa's tariff walls, because there was no question about it, it was simply South Africa set the tariffs and that was it, and they applied to everybody else. So there was a compensation, a financial element, which meant that a larger percentage of the revenue went to them to compensate for that, the loss of the fiscal discretion that they had, and also the loss of policy space, the loss also of being drawn behind what were at the time South Africa's high tariff walls. And you'll see the effect of that, because what it meant was that the revenue sharing that was in place and is still in place, although not explicitly with the same objectives, was there to compensate for the adverse effects of industrial polarization, price-raising effects, trade diversification. And then after 2002, there was the creation of a developmental component. But actually, up until now, all of that revenue simply goes to each individual country, and it goes into its own fiscus and is part of its own national budget. So as of this moment, not a single cent of that revenue goes to any common project of any sort, either industrial development, infrastructure, or anything. And then these are the institutions that are foreseen in the treaty, the Council of Ministers, the Commission. The Commission is the body of senior officials that meets beforehand, before the meeting. There's a rotating chair. And then the convention is that the Commission is chaired by the officials of the trade and industry ministries, and the Council is chaired by the Minister of Finance of their respective country. And then you have the SACU Summit, and then there's the what's envisaged in the agreement, although not in place, is that there should be a SACU tariff board. There should be a body in SACU that sets the tariffs. And in fact, what should happen is it says that there should be, each country should have its own national tariff board. So in South Africa at the moment, we have, of course, the International Trade Administration Commission. Each country should have something like that, that receives applications, makes proposals for tariffs. They're supposed to go to a SACU tariff board. Then the SACU tariff board makes a recommendation ultimately to the Council of Ministers. That's what's proposed. You'll see some of the concerns we have about that architecture later on. But that is provided for in the 2002 agreement. There's supposed to be in place a SACU tribunal. That has not come into existence. And then there's also a SACU secretariat. That has a building in Windhoek, and there is a secretariat in place, so that's a new institution. Then, in addition to that, establishment of a common negotiating mechanism. There been a lot of debate about that, but what it's settled down to be is that when we negotiate with third countries, for example, if we negotiate on the question of the Continental Free Trade Agreement, one of us leads, in that case it's South Africa. If we negotiate with the European Union on the EPAs, or now with the UK on a parallel arrangement after they leave the European Union, then another country leads, in that case is Botswana. The objectives that were defined were to facilitate the cross-border movement of goods, facilitate equitable sharing of customs and excise revenue, and facilitate the development of common policies. Now, some of the issues that have cropped up. We had, in 2007 and 8, we began to have some quite serious differences over the EPA negotiations. And also there was a decline in SACU revenue. Customs duties which are put in the pool. You'll also see its excise duties. Very unusual that excise duties go into any kind of revenue pool in any customs union, because they're not to do with trade. But customs duties are inherently volatile. They shift up and down depending on volumes of trade and things like that. In 2007-08, there was volatility. There was a reduction in customs duties collected. And the EVA issues were very, very difficult initially with the European Union. We had divisions, and we took different approaches. The common negotiating mechanism was actually rent asunder, if that's the right word. It was smashed. It was there was no consensus. Some of us were signed interim EPAs, others did not. Eventually, though, we managed to resolve some of those matters after 2007-08. In 2010, in the framework of the discussions about the future, it was introduced. We introduced the summit, but also a five-point work program, because I think we said that if SACA was to have a future, it can't just be a relationship of convenience held together by a redistributive revenue formula. It's actually got to be a tool of development integration. There must be some cooperation to promote cross-border value chains and regional industrial development. We agreed to review the revenue sharing formula. We agreed to advance trade facilitation, improve the movement of goods, customs efficiency, stuff like that, establish the SACA institutions, and establish unified engagement in trade negotiations. That five-point work program remains the basic stated program of SADC. In the 2013 SACA summit, we added trading services to the work program, which resulted in a six-point work program. We had differences over interpretation and the implementation of some of the provisions of the six-point plan. We're back there again. We had an impasse for quite a few years in that. I said to Minister Nene when he came back after his sabbatical in the BRICS New Development Bank, I said, I'm sure you will see that there are some things that are different, but there are some things that are exactly the same as they were when you left them, and SACA is one of them. Well, wherever he was, he came back to find SACA and the debates in SACA exactly where they were in 2013-14. So he missed nothing. In the 2017 SACA summit, we agreed that we would go back and review some aspects of the agreement, and we'll come to that in a minute. So now let me hand over to Minister.
Minister, just at this point, if I may. Just a little exigency has arisen from one of the members, and there's a need perhaps to brief the entire committee. We have permission to be here, was approved, number one. Number two, the matters that they are dealing with in the House do not start with committee reports, as I see. Yeah, is that correct? I'm looking at the orders of the day. So I do not want a debate. I want to indicate that we will proceed as a committee. If any member wants to leave, that is entirely up to them and their political party. Honourable Macpherson.
Sorry, Minister. We had to interrupt you in this. I mean, we just need some guidance, because my Deputy Chief Whip has indicated that your Chief Whip has said that the reports from trade and industry will be brought up before lunch, which would mean during the sitting of this committee. So there seems to be a communication breakdown between the House Chairperson and the Majority Chief Whip. So I seek guidance from you, Chair, on whether you want us to stay in the committee, or whether we need to go and address the reports, because I assume that members of the ANC would also need to make a declaration.
I'll ask a co-chair to respond.
Thanks, Chair. I'll respond, because our strategy when Honourable Khadebe raised the matter about the importance of first sitting and passing a resolution here in this meeting before we proceed to the House. also, it was made very clear by Honorable Khadebe in that meeting that we're first going to sit and pass the resolution before we proceed. So in any event, there's confusion about how programming proceeded with the report. There is no way that the report will be entertained before we finish this process. So members should relax. We will deal with it from the level of the chair in an event that there is a need for us. But it was made very clear. So if this confusion between the relationship of the programming committee where parties sit, it needs to be addressed by the WIP parties and the WIP of parties concerned. So it was reported adequately in the meeting.
I think I do apologize, Minister Davies, all right, but you had just finished then, hadn't you? And we were now going to have Minister Nene, right.
Thank you, Chairperson. And as Minister Davies correctly pointed out, that I'm told there's only one SOPI that... you can go on sabbatical in another country, and when you come back, you actually will still be able to follow. It is called the bold and the beautiful. You find you haven't missed anything. You can still, you'll be able to catch up. Well, it's obvious. But Chair, on the finance side. The key area is the revenue sharing formula. As Minister Davies pointed out, that this formula was designed in a particular way to also compensate for loss of policy sovereignty for the BELN, which used to be BLNS countries, which is now BELN because Swatini now comes earlier as it starts with the E. And this is how the formula is structured. The revenue pool is made up of the customs revenue and the excise revenue, and at 55% and 45%. And the way the formula works is that the customs component is distributed based on member states' share of the intra-SACU imports. We'll come to a slide that explains how that is stepped up. And then the excise component is distributed based on the member state's share of the SACU GDP. And then there is the development component in the formula, which is distributed evenly amongst member states with a small adjustment for the per capita GDP. You'll see how that will influence the formula when we get to the slide that explains that. Now, the agreement has evolved over years. As Minister Davies pointed out, this agreement goes far back to 1910 when it distributed revenue in accordance with the percentage share of customs and excise duty, which was originally paid on each country's imports into the Botswana, Lesotho, and Swaziland, which remained effective until 68-69 before Namibia came in. And in 1969, the agreement sought not only to compensate the BLS for their customs and excise duty content, but for the price-raising effects of tariffs that were levied by South Africa on a more equitable distribution basis of income across the customs union region, and also the issue of loss of fiscal discretion, as I said, and the polarization of development in favor of a much more developed South Africa back then. In 2002, when this new agreement came into being, it built on the 1969 revenue sharing formula, but introduced a new formula that redistributed more revenue to the BLNS by sharing customs revenue on intra-SACU import ratio and not the extra SACU import ratio as under the original agreement of 1910 and 1969. This is how it has evolved, and as it evolved, it had consequences for both the BLNS and for ourselves. 1910, you will see where South Africa, the black line, it represents BLN, and then the red line represents South Africa. Between, as you can see now, that they kept on getting better while South Africa was actually continuing to get worse, if I were to put it that way. And in 10, South Africa was at 98.7 with BLS at 1.3%. And in 69, South Africa came down to 86, BLS at 14, and in another amendment in 76, South Africa came down to 81 with BLS rising to 19, and then with the 2002, then South Africa came down to 54% with BLNS coming at 46%. Now this this slide shows now the implicit compensation in the new agreement of 2002, which shows that which embedded that because of the intra-SACO imports. You see on your left-hand side, it shows the average share of intra-SACO imports, and on your right, you've got the average share of the SACO GDP. So now, as you can see, while South Africa's GDP is actually 91% of the slice of the cake, South Africa only benefits 16% of that cake from the intra-SACO imports. With Botswana benefiting the most, you'll see then if you go back to the first slide that was showing how the formula is worked out in terms of slide seven. If we were to take per capita GDP for Botswana, this picture would change here, because then Botswana would actually be much wealthier than us because of its per capita GDP, even though its GDP as a percentage of SACO is smaller. Then the size and wealth of SACO economies, Botswana and Namibia are small but relatively wealthy economies. That's the point I just made now with regards to Botswana, followed by Namibia and then South Africa. If you look at the two, the average share of SACO population, you will see South Africa is 88%, but on the GDP per capita, South Africa has a 28% share, with Namibia at 22% and Botswana at 31%. So Botswana is actually relatively wealthier than us per capita. Now, how does this contribute to the economies or the total revenues of these countries? Slide 12 now talks to Botswana actually customs contribute or make up 27% of their total revenue, with Swatini and Lesotho actually being the most exposed, with the high percentages, where SACO receipts actually constitute high percentages, with Namibia at 32% and South Africa at only 3%. So these countries, there is actually a risk here where there is so much dependency on the SACO receipts on these other countries. This now shows the performance, the revenue performance from on the 2017 MTBPS numbers, which was projected for 2018-19, with Botswana at 19 and Lesotho at 5.5. If you compare this with the 2017 budget estimate, South Africa projected payments. South Africa's projected payments have now been revised down by 14.1 billion and by 19.8 billion in the outer MTF, with BLN projected payments having been...
Sorry, Minister, yes. May I ask you to talk a little bit higher? I think a lot of noise through the door, you know. Sorry about that. My apologies.
Thank you, Chair. I just missed one slide. I was talking to the next slide, 14, and looking at my... And I was wondering, I thought the Chair was bringing that to my attention. There's another meeting. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you. Thank you very much. Now, my apologies. I just on the screen slide 13, but I was talking to slide 14 on my the common revenue pool remittances with the average for the period from 2007-08 to 2016-17. You'll see that the remittances were, as outlined, Botswana at 225, Eswatini 74, Lesotho at 44, with Namibia at 166, with then all of them taking the 510, with South Africa at 3345. Those were this is what we paid in. So if you look at what we pay in, South Africa pays in 98% of the total remittances, but takes out 45.8% of that. That explains exactly then the concerns we have with regards to the formula as it stands. You will see that whilst Swatini only puts in 0.2%, but it takes out 7.1%, with Lesotho putting in 0.1% and taking out 5.5%, and Botswana at 21.7% putting in 0.7% and taking 21.7%, and Namibia putting in 0.5%, taking 19.9%. So that's how the numbers look like. Then the slide that I was talking to earlier, which I rushed into, is the one that then talks about revenue performance that we projected in the 2017 MTBPS for 2018-19, where I said compared with 2017 budget estimates, our projected payments have been revised down by 14.1 billion in the 2018-19 financial year, and by 19.8 billion in 2019-2020. Members would know that we actually collect, distribute, and then only then do we do the reconciliation, and then would be able to know how much exactly was supposed to be paid. So that's how the numbers look like over the MTEF. You will see that drivers of lower budget estimates, the shrinking common revenue pool is due to poor economic climate that impacts trade and results in lower revenue collections. And then there will also always be a correction of overpayments, which if we have made payments in 2016, and we would then correct after reconciliation, and also have done the same in the coming years. Now, with that's the main part on the finance track of our SACCO. South Africa continues to set the excise duties on behalf of SACCO, and South Africa continues also to manage the SACCO common revenue pool, which is made up of customs and excise revenue, which is collected in the customs union. That's it, Chair. And thank you. I now allow Minister Davis to proceed with the trade and industry issues.
Thank you very much, Minister Nene. As this changeover is made, we were just briefed now by the leadership downstairs in the House and here that, yes, acknowledging there was a different arrangement, nevertheless, they would appreciate it if we could go down to the House at 11:15, and I believe it is possible for us to do that and still adopt. So it is now 10:40. Can we move?
Let me move then. And try to say the issues on the tariff setting. I've already started to say some of this. At the moment, the International Trade Administration Commission is being agreed to be the interim tariff-setting body for SACCO. That means the South African-based body. ITAC works on the basis of industry players make requests. There is a board which sits and adjudicates and makes recommendations to myself, and then off, from me to the Ministry of Finance for implementation of any tariff changes. That's the arrangement we have in place at the moment. There are representatives of the other countries on that body. Also, that body can receive applications coming from them, and any views that they have are taken into account. But the architecture that's envisaged in the treaty, as I indicated earlier, says that what should happen is that each country should have its own body, like ITAC, and then there's a SAKU tariff board, a separate institution that receives recommendations from the national bodies. If there are differences in the in that, then it finds a solution by consensus, and then that would go for final sign-off by the SAKU Council. Now, just to say that we have made the point in the discussions, and to the point where we are, where the deadlock happened in 2013, the other countries are saying they are now ready to set up their national tariff boards, and they want to establish the SAKU tariff board. And we have said that we have a view that the architecture that was provided for in the 2002 agreement is not going to work, and for a number of reasons it's not going to work. First of all, in the process of engagement, SAKU itself commissioned a study, and that study found that the tariff setting architecture of five national bodies would slow down the process of setting a tariff. You'd have to have five different processes. Each of those may come up with very different recommendations on a particular matter, and then that matter would have to go into the SAKU tariff board. It would be inefficient and a much more cumbersome process of taking a decision. That's the first point that we want to make. And we say that we have to review this architecture. We say that the way the world is operating now, it would not just be tariffs, but it's also trade remedies. It's anti-dumping, safeguard measures, and things of that sort. We have to go through a long and cumbersome process, and I'll indicate some of the differences that we are already coming across between ourselves and some of the other countries. So the question of decision-making is an issue of discussion within us, and in fact differences. And we have made the point that, you know, if we just were to agree that there's a consensus between five of us, four of us have got nearly or just over 10% of the total population of our area, around 10% of the GDP, if they are able to have an equal decision with us, what that would mean, it would mean that the citizens of small countries would have a super vote, and the citizens of the larger economy would have a much lesser vote. Our vote would be the same as Lesotho, which has about 1.5 million people. That's what it would mean. And in fact, if you look around the world, we find in the EU, that's not the way they work. So in the EU, a qualified majority is what's used to take decisions, including on legislation and including on tariff setting. So there's the example there. 55% of member states must vote in favor, and it must be a tariff proposal must be supported by states representing at least 65% of the total population. So we say for a start that the idea of the separate tariff boards will be slow, and secondly, that consensus would be a problem. I should say that some of the issues that we find, let's take one of the topical ones recently, the sugar tariff. Botswana has a bottling industry, and they use sugar, they're downstream. We've got downstream industries, and one of the devil's own jobs has been to balance the downstream and the upstream and to find a decision that doesn't necessarily appeal to everyone, but we have to have a balance, and we've got the whole value chain, if you like, in South Africa. Now, some of the other countries, Botswana's got a bottling industry, they don't produce sugar. They have no interest whatsoever in whether the sugar is imported or whether the sugar comes from a local source. Their bottling industry, I was told, has got about 150 people working in it. Our sugar industry's got 30,000 people working in it. So are we going to have a decision made
balance one against the other on this basis, or are we going to have a look at the whole of the value chain? So that's an issue that we have there, for example. Secondly, we found that where we have rebates, we have a tariff and then there's a rebate for industrial development. A rebate that says that if you're part of an auto program and you produce so many thousand vehicles, X percent of the imports and the components can come in duty-free. That's part of our incentive package. Now, what we are detecting is a view that says that rebate is a deduction from the revenue pool. If you apply it, you must put more money back into the revenue pool and distribute it according to that formula. That's what's been said. That's what's been said to us. We say, no, the revenue is the applied tariff. That rebate is part of the overall applied tariff. But we have that difference, and that difference would certainly be a factor that we would bear in mind. So I think that we are saying that the idea of having a five bodies, one body, and that this is the way it's going to work is not going to cut it for us. Tariffs are a tool of industrial development. They're not a tool of revenue raising. We've agreed on that in principle, but we have obvious areas of possible tensions on these, and we think that what it would mean effectively if we were to agree to the architecture of the 2002 agreement is that we would disable the use of tariffs as a tool of industrial development, particularly for South Africa, and that we would not be agile enough in applying trade remedies, and that would be a matter of considerable problems for us. Now, what we've been saying as well is that we went around and in 2017 with the then president to each of those countries, and we said that the 2002 agreement will need to be amended. We got an understanding from all of the heads of state, and here's where the debate was, that if necessary, the agreement can be changed. So the question has been, is it necessary? For a long time, it was like that. In the last meeting, we have lots of changes in heads of state, not just ours, lots of changes in ministers. That understanding is forgotten. And in fact, people are saying, we just want to implement the 2002 agreement. We've said, well, we've changed it once to accommodate the summit. So what is so sacrosanct about this in place? That's the deadlock, that's the issue that we've got, is advancing the 2002 agreement versus what we're saying. So I think that what we've been saying as the government is that we can't concede easily on this one. On industrial development, I'm not even going to go through that because I see you want to rush us. So let me say that we've said that we need to cooperate on industrial development. Not one brass cent of that money that Minister Nene talked about has been used for any program of common development, one thing or the other. So we haven't moved on the industrial development. Meantime, SADC has had two summits on industrial development, and so the work on this continues to languish. There are the areas that we've said we would work on industrial development. So the differences on tariff setting I've gone through. I think I've gone through that. The development of common policies as a basis for maybe at some stage moving towards a more inclusive arrangement. We are prepared to concede some more representation of other countries in the single tariff setting body, but not the existing architecture, as I've already said. The development component is not at the moment earmarked for developmental purposes. That may be something that may change a little bit with a small fund that is a possibility. But at the moment, as I said, there's nothing else in there. On the approach to integration, our approach to regional integration is we are strong proponents of it. You'll see that when you come to the discussion of the Continental FTA, the Trade and Industry Committee. But we see integration, regional integration, within a development integration paradigm. And that means that it's not just about market integration. But in fact, in the continental level, the market integration that we're seeking is at the level of free trade agreements,
right,
where we have removed duties on substantially all trade, but we don't have a common external tariffs. We cooperate to promote industrial development, and we cooperate on infrastructure development.
But we need to stop you here. We don't have time, really.
Okay, well, there you are. That's it.
Yeah.
The rest you can read at your leisure.
I did start the chairing, and I just want to remind you again to have to adopt this separately in our separate committee. Do we understand that? Right. So,
yeah, they do it.
What
yeah.
we need to do, we've got a report drafted in. Yes. Are there any clarifications on that?
So we're going to give you half a minute for that, because we don't have much time. Can you show?
Yeah. Sorry, I'm not sure that this is something that can just be asked in half a minute. I mean, just because the House can't get its programming in order, you know, mustn't stop us from asking questions. So I've got a couple of questions that I'd like to ask Minister Davies. Minister, one of the objectives of SAQU is to improve the movement of goods from South Africa to neighbouring countries. Now, one of the a business told me once that in order for goods that land in a port in South Africa and for them to get to a business in Namibia requires 1,000 pieces of paper and $300. That's the total cost. Now, that hardly seems efficient within the system. So what are we doing to improve improve that? Now,
Honourable MacPherson, if I may appeal to you, can we simply ask the question?
No, I'm asking the question.
Yes.
That was a question.
There was a preface.
Well, there has to be in order to ask the question.
Honourable MacPherson, please respect your chair. That's how we conduct ourselves in the Trade and Industry Committee.
Well, that's why I'm not in the Finance. That's why I'm not in the Finance Committee.
Please, you need to.
Now,
any discussion is irrelevant to the resolution.
I don't know who's chairing this meeting.
We are co-chair.
Okay, great. Well, then I'll keep moving on. With respect to the second question, and it will be both to the Minister of Finance and Minister of Trade and Industry. I mean, this is not a new issue with respect to South Africa's declining revenue share. We contribute the most, we administer the system, and we get the least out of it. I mean, that sounds like a daft deal on any score. Why has it taken us so long to get to this point of actually having a review? And how do we get around the problem of agreeing to new terms if it is done on a consensus basis, because no country in SAQU is going to agree to a different revenue sharing model if they don't benefit the more or at least
thank
the same.
You.
Thank you.
Colleagues, honourable members, it's a couple of minutes max. Honourable Mahlobo, Honourable Lees, Honourable Khadebe, those are the only questions we are taking.
Thanks, Chair. I think we should be able to support the ministries on this work. It's long overdue. We know that in as much as we want to promote regional economic integration, the institution is more than 100 years old. It was meant for a particular purpose. Therefore, to transform it for the current condition is a welcome relief. The only sad note is that there are people who are just trying to pull backwards. But my view is that this House, we should be able to support them so that they can be able to do what is in the interest of South Africa, because national interest is more important, whilst also acknowledging that we are part of the region and the continent. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Mahlobo. Yes, Honourable Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the Ministers.
I think this is to you, Minister Nana, really. If I look at the figures, the difference between what South Africa puts in terms of slide 13 and what it takes out is 4 billion rand, which in terms of the big picture is relatively small, but nevertheless it's 4 billion rand. What analysis has been done with regard to comparing other revenue-raising measures in those member states as compared with South Africa? So in other words, is it possible that the other states could bring their revenue-raising measures up to a level that compares with ours in order to compensate for any loss of this kind of revenue? And then I hear what everyone's saying, and I think as David says, we'll probably need to support you on this, but is the question of economic stability in our neighbours, which is important, and how has that been factored into the negotiation?
Thank you, Honourable Khadebe.
Chairperson, first of all, the person will appreciate the inputs made by the minister, but I'll just go direct to the issue of the rebates, which are expected to be used as a revenue-generating mechanism. I think, Chairperson, I'll just look at one industry, auto industry. Our auto industry in South Africa is facing challenges. It's the fact that it's having competition. We know very well that Kenya is now established, getting stronger on that industry. Ethiopia is going to open a lot of size in manufacturing of components. And then the issue of Morocco, if you can look at Morocco itself, by 2036, it will be surpassing us as a country in the auto industry. So I think that we have to support the ministers in declaring that the issue of the rebates, the issue of the tariffs, must be used as a tool of industrialization, because we cannot lose that competitive edge. And then as Honorable Mashaba has said before, that the purpose of SACU, the way it was established, is no longer relevant now. I think it's high time that it is reviewed as quickly as possible. So we are in support of this review mechanism we're putting in place. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Debbie. Honourable Co-Chair Tobias.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable Ministers, I wish there was a structure probably chaired by President that becomes a buffer to address impasses as and when Ministers of Finances and Ministers of Trade doesn't win negotiations, because sometimes it's about the technique of negotiation as opposed to the substantive issues that you deal with that can make people to come to agreement. So I hope the summit will find a way of dealing with it. But my interest is on the tribunal. The recommendation should strongly ensure that there is a tribunal, because it's the only point at which, when matters have not been resolved, you can deal with them adequately. The last one is on overpayments. I'm interested to know whether the 2016 overpayments, Minister of Finance, whether the 2016 overpayments has been refunded back to the fiscal so that it does not occur in the current financial year, as we've seen it before. So thank you, that's all.
Thank you. It's over to yourselves, Ministers. Minister Davies? Right, Minister Nene?
Thank you. The first question to ask was why it has taken this long to review the revenue sharing formula. I think what Minister Davies was trying to explain when he says, after all these engagements at this level, very little progress has been made. So it's not that it has taken long. We've been engaging with the hope that we would be able to find each other. And it's for that reason also that we're coming back to this legislature also to take, a mandate as a country, because our discussions cannot just end at the level of ministers. And there's the other question that was asked by the co-chair, Mr. Byers, about a structure chaired by the president. A number of times these matters have been escalated to the summit for further engagement so that we can actually resolve the impasse. The fact of the matter is that it's very difficult to get people to, you know, there's a new principle that they, that has been introduced, that whatever the review arrives at, no one should be made worse off. And now, you know, by implication, what that means is that no one should be made better off. So that's what it is. So a review that would be able to put us on a better footing would actually is proving very difficult to arrive at. So it is one of the reasons why we are coming back to the capital. We've taken the matter to cabinet. We are here in parliament today because we indeed would want a considered mandate from this from parliament. The overpayments, we will always have overpayments because we pay and then do the reconciliation, and after the reconciliation are we then able to know exactly whether the amount paid was not accurate. And I wish that at times we would be able to get money back if we have, but it doesn't happen. In most cases we actually always have to get the the other question was with regards to slide 13.
I'm going to request you to move with speed. We promised the chief whip will be in the chamber before 12:30, so 12:15.
Oh, the slide 13.
Chief whip of the majority party, the leading party.
Well, we think, Mr. Lee, the only solution to this is the establishment of the development fund. Because when we establish the development fund towards infrastructure, we would then be able to, those countries would be able to benefit from the industrial fund. Because at the end of the day, indeed, their revenue raising capacity is indeed limited. But at the same time, I think it is important for us also not to take from our own. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. Let's allow the blood pressure to cool. Minister Davies.
No, I think I'll just be very, very brief and quick. I think that I'm taking from this meeting that nobody is asking us to go along and concede that the revenue sharing formula remains as it is, and with the compensation element in it, and at the same time we concede on the tariff setting mechanisms as they are in the treaty. I think I'm taking that because I think that would be to have cake and eat it. The compensation for the loss, and at the same time to have the mechanism in place. So I think that what we can do, and just address the question of the Mr. Lee's, obviously we're not indifferent to the impact on neighboring countries. I think that what is possible is not these large changes as envisaged by some, but that we can work together practically maybe on a small set of projects that promote industrial development, that work and cooperate and stuff like that. That we can work around that. We can improve the way we work together on negotiation of things like the arrangement with the economic partnership agreement with the British after Brexit. I think those are the things that are within the realm of the possibility. We need to say that we are in a deadlock. A deadlock on these issues that's been around for a very long time. And I think that with the support of Parliament, we can go back in there and say this is not something that we're going to easily be able to just concede on. Therefore, let's all work together on what's possible, and let's try to get a meeting of minds around what I think is possible. On the question, I don't think there would be 1,000 pieces of paper. It's not tax administration. The borders is not ours. It's actually finance. But trade facilitation is one of the objectives. Improving the efficiency of borders and moving towards one-stop border posts and stuff like that is within the realm of possibilities, and we could all benefit from greater efficiencies in that regard. Let me leave it there then, in the interest of time.
Thank you very much, Minister Nene, Minister Dr. Rob Davies, and also Minister, Deputy Minister, as well from finance. Yes. Now, I want to make it very clear that SACU we are all familiar with. We've had briefings annually, so it's not new. One thing has come out clear, and that is that we all agree with advancing the position that the architecture entailed in the 2002 SACU agreement on tariff setting be reviewed. to find a more suitable decision-making mechanism for tariff setting. So now, the trade and industry component of this meeting, we need to take a formal decision. You've all got this in front of you. Mine just happens to be an aerial. Right. Report of the Portfolio Committee on Trade and Industry and the standing, well, we shouldn't say Andy. Yeah. Of the 2002 Southern African Customs Union SACU agreement dated 11 September 2018. I shall read the first paragraph and the ending. The PEC Trade and Industry and Standing Committee on Finance, having considered the subject of the review of the 2002 Southern African Customs Union agreement and briefed by the Ministers of Trade and Industry and of Finance on it, reports as follows. The committee notes that the 2002 SACU agreement is currently undergoing a review and needs to be transformed to implement a developmental integration approach that seeks to promote industrialization and economic diversification of SACU economies. The committee is therefore resolved that the Ministers of Trade and Industry and Finance should undertake the following during their engagements with SACU. It lists the 6 points. The recommendation is that the committees recommend that the National Assembly approve the said resolution, the report to be considered. As we noted, we also had the DM on Lingongubele. Can we have someone in trade and industry to propose this? Honourable Matlobo, seconded by the Honourable Hadebe. Right. We have now completed the process with trade and industry, co-chair Tobias.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Based on the rules, we need to also have a separate voting process. So, Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee on Understanding Committee on Finance, I'm going to read the first three paragraphs and the 6 points, you have them. So, the report on the portfolio on the Standing Committee on Finance on the review of the 2002 Southern African Customs Union agreement dated 11 September 2018. The Standing Committee on Finance, having considered the subject of the review of the 2002 Southern African Customs Union SACU agreement and briefed by the Ministers of Finance and Trade, respectively, reports as follows. The committees note that the 2002 SACU agreement is currently undergoing a review. SACU needs to be transformed to implement a developmental integration approach that seeks to promote industrialization and economic diversification of SACU economies. The committee therefore resolves that the Ministers of Trade and Industry and of Finance should undertake the following during their engagements with SACU. Those are the 6 points listed, and we further go to the recommendation. The committee recommends that the National Assembly approve the said resolution. May I have a mover for the adoption of the proposal? Honorable Masangu, and a seconder, Honorable Ntanti. So thank you very much, Honorable Members. Therefore, we have resolved.
Our members, I want to thank every member present here, including those who were co-opted to the various committees. I also want to indicate that the second item that was scheduled for today can only be scheduled in October, when both committees are available, according to the secretaryship. So, please, the meeting is adjourned today. Thank you.
Honourable Member, going back to the chamber, as the three line, thank you.
Okay, well, the other one is coming back.
Well, that was my story. Thank you, guys.
Very nice job.
Yeah.